Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Mormon News Report podcast, episode number 65 for the week of November 5th, 2018, the Get Out and Vote edition. I don't care who you vote for. I don't care what your political leanings are. The most important thing that we could do in our democracy is to vote and vote as real Americans or whatever country you live in. Hi, my name is Brandt. I'm coming to you live from my basement in Detroit, Michigan, and we don't have Jenny today, and I'm sorry, but we do have a good substitute.
Rachel!
We do have Rachel from Late in the Day Saints. Rachel, how are you?
I'm never better. How are you, Brandt?
I'm so good. Thank you for joining me, because I'll be honest, listening to me blather for 90 minutes is probably not going to be the best. So at least we've got you here to offer some commentary and, frankly, to shut me up when I need to.
It's fine. Your voice is very soothing, whether you like it or not.
I don't know, especially based on how today's gone. I was telling you before we started recording, so just so everyone knows, this is how my morning was. And I'm well aware that my wife has to deal with this every Sunday morning. The compromise we made with my 2.5-year-old was you can wear unicorn leggings under your dress to go to church. You can also wear My Little Pony snow boots, despite the fact that there's no snow on the ground, just because we got to get out the door. So fine, let's just throw everything out the window. Plus, the Lions just got embarrassed on national TV, so I'm in a bit of a mood. And Rachel, just so you're aware, I don't know how your Halloween was. I was frankly disappointed at the lack of Butterfingers in my neighborhood. There were not a lot of Butterfingers given out for Halloween.
We had no Butterfingers.
What is going?
I saw one Butterfinger the whole weekend.
Like we talked about this, right? Like Butterfingers are at the top or near the top of the Halloween candy hierarchy. And the fact that people aren't handing those out is a travesty and is something that should be rectified immediately.
I think that's when people are like, oh, well, someone might have a peanut allergy. But then those are the same people that still pass out fun-sized Snickers.
Right.
You know, it's like, wait a minute. Make up your mind here.
The Snickers. We have plenty of Snickers. We have plenty of Milky Ways. I will say this. I am a huge fan of Skittles. They're my favorite candy on the face of the earth. We got a ton of Skittles, so that was a nice thing. But still, no Butterfingers is unacceptable. In 2018, Rachel, no Butterfingers is unacceptable.
I agree.
How was your thing? How was your Thanksgiving? Boy, I'm already looking at that. How was your Halloween?
It was pretty good. We didn't go trick-or-treating this year because I'm lazy and forgot to buy candy. So we went to my in-laws' neighborhood, and my 5-year-old and my 2-year-old passed out candy. Like, they were the ones sitting there passing out candy until my 2-year-old caught a glimpse of one of those inflatable T-Rex costumes, you know, those things that are all over the internet. It was hilarious. And she freaked out so bad, but she was trying to keep it under wraps. So she'd go, Mom, there's a dinosaur. We need to get inside right now. Like, she was like using a mom voice. You need to get inside right now or we're going to die. And she like made me lock the door and stuff. It was hilarious.
Hold on. I gotta back up. Are you one of those families where you don't go trick-or-treating?
No, this is the first year we didn't go.
And it was only because you didn't buy any candy or anything like that?
I didn't buy any candy because usually I'll sit and pass out the candy and Colin would take the kids around, but he had rehearsal for a band that he's subbing for. And so I was like, nah, I want them to enjoy it. And if I'm sitting there without help, it won't be fun for anybody. So.
Okay. That's a fair point.
That makes sense.
Because you originally said it was because you guys didn't buy candy. So therefore it almost sounded like you felt bad going out without buying any candy. But I'll say this. So it was me and the 2 girls in the wagon walking around our neighborhood. And Ashley stayed home and handed out the candy. And we've done that the last 3 years and it's worked out. She gets a break from the girls. I get to go out and walk around with them. But if it was just me flying solo or her flying solo, I don't know what we would have done. Cause we actually get a fairly decent amount of kids that come by trick or treating. So it's like, I don't know about that. All I'm saying is Halloween's over. I told Ashley, I was like, well, you know, we've got a Kroger, we've got a Kmart closing right next to us. Maybe I'll go over there and scoop up all the candy. And she's like, we have a huge paper bag full of candy. We don't need any more candy in this house. So I don't know. Based on how today's gone, that's all we've done is eaten candy. Like we are the parents of the year because that's all my kids have eaten today. So
yeah, I
think I'm just at a point where let's just get it over with. Let's get all the candy out of here.
Well, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Anyways, okay, so
my Kmart was closing.
Listen, this one over here, it's taken forever for it to close, and they finally closed it. And the thing is, usually when you see those big store closing signs, you get a lot of people that want to flock it and see, oh, is there anything good there? This place is deserted. No one wants to go there. I even asked Ashley, I said, should we go over there and see if they've got any toys or anything that we should check out for Christmas or birthdays? And she's like, it's Kmart. There's not going to be anything in there. So anyway,
everyone thinks that about Kmart. I'm surprised they're even open anymore.
I know. Well, that's the reason why they're shutting them all down, because no one's going to Kmart. Another thing that millennials are ruining. Apparently, we have ruined the Applebee's and Olive Garden business. Apparently, we have ruined the napkin business. And now we've ruined Kmart and Sears. So thanks, Rachel. That's what your generation has done.
Ruined the straw business.
Ah, straws. Yeah.
Anyways. I'm not a millennial. I'm Gen X. I'm a lot older than I look. I just moisturize.
Oh, is that what it is? Listen, I think we're all to the point where, like, millennials are like the catch-all term for anything about the younger generation that people don't like. We'll just call them all millennials.
I just call them all PSLs, pumpkin spice lattes.
Ooh. Does that include the men?
Yes, actually. can be pumpkin spice lattos if that makes you feel better.
Maybe. I mean, if we're going to use proper gender punctuation, that's
proper,
the way it'll go.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're gender specific over here.
I've got to read this. Did you participate? We got some feedback from Justin via Facebook. And I've got to ask you, did you do the social media fast?
I did.
Okay. So let me read this, and I want to get your thoughts on it. So Justin wrote in and said, is it just me, or did it seem like every discussion about President Nelson's particular challenge in the women's session to participate in the 10-day fast completely ignored half of that challenge? There was a lot of discussion thrown around on it, but I didn't hear anyone discussing fasting, quote, from other media that brings negative and impure thoughts, end quote. In the least, I think it shines a little more light on the purpose of the fast. It was really a call to do more than just get rid of social media for 10 days. In that context, staying on social media may have been just fine for some. So did you pick up on that second part of the clause when President Nelson talked about the social media fast, that we should be staying away from other media that brings negative and impure thoughts?
Maybe not other media. I just assumed he meant like, you know, when moms kind of mom shame each other or get like mom jealousy whenever they see those perfect pictures on Instagram of like, you know, blessings of three posting pictures of her like perfectly manicured home with her perfectly manicured children, with her perfectly manicured cookies, because nobody makes a mess in that house because they're perfect. You know, I figured it was that kind of thing. I wasn't thinking anything like, you know, pornographic or anything like that. It was more just like jealousy was starting to like make them obsess over how they handle their household, and it wasn't like in a healthy way. That's kind of what I took from it. And I didn't really think of this as a commandment, like a fasting, because a bunch of people were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're doing that. I'm like, it's just an invitation. I've RSVP'd yes.
Well, you know, so a couple of things that are interesting about that. So when I first saw the brings negative and impure thoughts, you want to know where I went with that? When he was talking about the media, my thought was like Fox News, MSNBC, who knows, Alex Jones, if you listen to something like that, if you listen to InfoWars, something crazy like that, that would bring about some of those negative thoughts and impure. I think you're right in the sense that impure for the longest time has talked about something sexualized, but at the same time, and it leads kind of to some of what he talked about a little bit later in some interviews that he did this week, but it seems like impure thoughts are basically anything that's not Christ-like. And yeah, especially based on some of the political climate that we have now, the fact that people can't talk to each other anymore, it does seem like it's like maybe it's something like that. Really, I don't know if I want to go down the road of saying hate-filled, but really negative-filled rhetoric around politics and current events issues, or what you were saying when it comes to women and some of the mom shaming that does go on. And I like what you said, that you didn't view it as a commandment, but an invitation, because I think I wonder if a lot of people looked at it that way. Like, this is something I've wanted to do, but this is kind of maybe the kick in the pants, like the, hey, why don't you just give it a shot type of thing maybe it was like, okay, let's do it and let's see what happens with it.
Yeah. I mean, he even said in it, I invite you. He didn't say, I command you.
Which is interesting, because a little bit later on in an interview that he did, or that his wife did with newsroom or Mormon newsroom or whatever you want to call it, she actually said that he does not ever want to use the word must. You must do this, which kind of lines up with what he did with his social media fast, which was an invitation. So I'm glad that Justin brought that up, because I think it's an interesting wrinkle in the whole thing. And I know that we've had a lot of passionate thoughts about it. I got to ask you, do you have any predictions or inkling for what you think is going to happen in April? Do you think the men are going to get some sort of a challenge? Is it going to be a social media fast challenge?
They're going to be told to stop playing Fortnite and Clash of Clans for at least 10 days.
Well, okay. So I guess if anything, this is how we can trivialize some of the men by saying, hey, quit playing games on your phone or whatever.
Not just that. How about Sunday football?
Rachel.
What?
Hold on a second.
I am asking for miracles here.
Let's.
Okay?
We do not need. Listen, we do not need to get crazy here on some of these things. Okay, there's rational and reasonable, and then there's crazy, and we don't need to go down crazy road.
Okay.
I'm just throwing that out there. Right. I've got to ask you.
Why I left hockey out.
Was that?
Well, that's why I left hockey out, because hockey needs to be watched by everyone.
So. You want to talk about a shelf breaking? You want to talk about a shelf breaking? If they say hockey's out, I'm done. I'm out. I'm completely out. Cause especially now that we're getting into the middle of, you know, football season is kind of at its crescendo almost in the college season. And then we've got hockey season that's starting to gear up. Yep. There comes a time when we need to draw a line somewhere. And that's what
I'm
saying.
Anything happens to hockey, I'm throwing my CTR ring in the river.
Whoa.
Just saying.
So you're in the Pittsburgh-ish area. Are you close to Pittsburgh?
Kind of. I live in the city of Pittsburgh, so you know, I'm just a little close to Pittsburgh.
So coincidentally enough, and I don't mean this to be a positive thing, but obviously the Tree of Life synagogue shooting happened this last week in the Pittsburgh area. Was that obviously a big news story around you guys? Were you guys affected by that in some way? Like, was it close to you guys, far away from you guys?
It was close to where Colin works. So on Saturdays, he teaches at Carnegie Mellon. He teaches the children, the little C-mites is what they're called. He teaches them music eurythmic classes, which is basically music education through movement. And a bunch of kids were sent home early because their families, like a bunch of them, live in the neighborhood that the Tree of Life is in. Mm. And so, yeah, it was really rough. I found out about it by my mother-in-law calling me and saying, don't go down to Squirrel Hill. And so then I called Colin and was like, you can't go to Squirrel Hill. Tell your students and their parents not to go to Squirrel Hill. And it was like, it was a big pandemonium. Most of my friends, like in my ward, and my kids, like they're the parents of my kids' fellow classmates. We're all on this Facebook thing together, and we're like, nobody go to Squirrel Hill. What's going on? Because you know, the story was developing as it was happening, and so we were all just like really scared for the people in the synagogue and people that we know that live in that area. So because the shooter was very unabashedly shooting back at the police.
Yeah.
So we were like, if he's going to shoot at the police, he's going to shoot at somebody else too, whoever's in the way. So,
and the reason I asked that is because the shooting happened last Saturday, and it was surprising. I know that a lot of people were wringing their hands, specifically those who probably were looking to levy any sort of criticism they could at the church, saying, why hasn't the church responded yet? Why hasn't the church responded yet? And they did respond this week in a post through Mormon Newsroom on the 29th, so 2 days later. Mm-hmm. And people were saying we should have responded that day. And I don't disagree with them. We probably should have been a little more abrupt in responding. But at the same time,
They probably didn't know exactly what was happening in order to put a statement out in the first place.
And when President Nelson is traveling, I would have to assume, like any major, and people get uncomfortable with this, when the church is a big corporation, right? Like it's run like a corporation and it is a corporation. Those things need to be vetted by the highest levels of leadership within a corporation. And when he's in Chile, it might not be the easiest to get the statement to him just to get his final blessing on it. So, do you have the statement there in front of you? Do you mind reading that?
Yes. We expressed our deepest grief and solidarity with our Jewish friends around the world after the heinous violence perpetrated against congregants of the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. It is our constant prayer that God will heal and protect those affected by such tragic events. When the security and religious freedom of our Jewish brothers and sisters is violated, we all suffer. Houses of worship should be safe, inviolate places for people of all faiths to join in sacred fellowship and seek communion with God. We condemn the environment of hate-filled rhetoric that has become so prevalent. Anti-Semitism has no place in our society. It is the responsibility of good people everywhere to speak out and stand up for each other's rights to worship and live peacefully.
It's a great statement, and it's something that I'm glad that they did. And I know that they've made statements in the past. I want to say quite a few years ago when there was a shooting at a Sheikh monastery, or I'm not sure exactly where they meet. The church has done similar things, but it's crazy. It's crazy that we're getting to this point, right? Where we have to make these statements. And that this stuff keeps happening. And there was just another shooting this last week at a yoga studio, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know. Between this, between some of the pipe bombs that were sent to people, between all the craziness that's happening, I'll go on a limb. Personally, I would like to see it phrased a little bit stronger than that. But I think the fact that they are actively making these statements is a good thing. And we're not waiting. You know, because I think about what happened with the Charleston massacre a few years back. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was last summer? I think it might have been last summer. I think it was.
I don't know. It's all a blur.
It's all a blur, Rachel, because it keeps happening. This stuff keeps happening.
Yeah, exactly. I actually wasn't that concerned with how they worded their statement with this, because my bishop reached out to the synagogue personally to say, like, let us know what we can do to help you. Like, he offered up our building for them to have services on Saturdays if they needed it. But I mean, they of course went with a different Jewish synagogue, which is totally fine. But like, he reached out immediately because he was here in order to do it immediately. So I don't know. I'm not caught up in any hullabaloo over the presidency getting it out 2 days later. I don't care.
Well, and you know what? Hearing that story about your bishop, like that, to be honest, those are the stories that I personally love hearing, because that's what should be happening, right? Like, yeah. we have done that before. I think with the flooding that happened in Houston, we did stuff like that. And that's the way that it should be. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yeah, we should be reaching out. And actually that leads really well into this other story that happened. So President Nelson is down in Colombia, or in Chile, in South America. Tad Walsh from the Deseret News traveled with him, and he was interviewed. President Nelson was interviewed by Sergio Rubin, who is the author of an authorized biography on Pope Francis. And it's interesting because he actually asked President Nelson, it's interesting to see how some of the media works, especially media within Utah, because the Deseret News is going to be a little softer in some of their questions, whereas
a little cuter
and probably focusing more on some of the profile sides of things, but they're not going to ask
the hard questions.
Yeah, yeah. Like hard hitting journalistic questions. So one of the things that came out of this discussion that President Nelson was having with Sergio Rubin was, he said, quote, "The Catholics and the members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we need to work together to stem the tide of violence. The teachings of the Lord are clear," he said, after Rubin asked him about extremists whose violence is motivated by religion. "There is to be no contention, no disputation. We should love one another, so violence has no place in society." Rubin also asked him how he managed to cope with all these reports of violence. "That is incomprehensible," President Nelson said. "Hatred, violence, murder, all are against the teachings of the Lord." He called mass shootings, quote, "a great offense to God," which, again, it's I think the fact that we're seeing this, and the fact that President Nelson is very active on getting these statements out there. Again, I'd like them to be out there a little bit sooner, but I also understand, you know, you got a big machine. I understand how the big machine works. The interesting thing about this interview, though, was Sergio Rubin asked him a few questions that are very pertinent to he, as a Catholic, and his audience, right? One of the questions was on immigration. And Rachel, I found this wording that President Nelson used. Look, President Nelson's a very bright and I don't know how to phrase it. Like, mentally, he's very sharp for 94 years old. So on immigration, President Nelson said, "We need to teach that we should build projects of cooperation instead of fences of opposition," adding, "I don't like fences." So I'm
thinking the white picket ones.
Well, maybe that, or maybe, I don't know, a big fence along the border, the southern border of the United States between us and Mexico.
Oh, yeah, that thing. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So I found that. I don't think that was a coincidental phrasing is what I'm saying. Ruben asked whether U.S. Supreme Court might reverse abortion laws, but President Nelson said it appears to be settled law. Again, if you're thinking from a Catholic context, abortion is something that's still very, very – Catholics are very passionate talking about it, and they have very passionate views on it. He said, I don't see that as a very likely possibility, President Nelson said, but nonetheless, we teach our people to have respect for human life from conception to the grave. It's a sacred matter, and people offend the Creator when they interfere with his plans, so we strongly support the sacredness of the body. Unfortunately, we're a minority, so ...
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I think it's interesting, and this will lead into the story that we're going to cover after the break, the big story this week, which is basically President Nelson and Sister Nelson talking a lot. But I think that we're seeing a church president. President Hickley was a talkative president, and mm-hmm. he was very good with the media. President Monson
was a PR guy.
He was a PR guy, right? And he did a lot of work mainstreaming the church. President Monson, not so much. He didn't. I don't remember him doing that much. But I think the thing that stands out about President Nelson is he's a talker, and he's got views on things. And I don't think he's. I don't think he's. Not that there was anything wrong with President Hinckley doing this, but he's not being as tiptoey careful as President Hinckley and right. staying neutral on things. He's got views on it, and he's gonna tell you those views, which is it's almost refreshing in a sense. Until
I like it. I prefer honesty over anything else.
Until it starts, you know, bucking up against some of what we think, right? And it's like, oh, wait, I didn't really.
Wait a minute.
Oh, I didn't like it that way. Okay. Anyways, I'm gonna quiz you here. This is from Fox 4 KC down in Kansas City, Missouri.
I watch that station all the time.
Of course, right? Like it's on my frequent channel thing or whatever. Okay. What three faiths believe that the second coming of Jesus will happen in Independence, Missouri? One of those should be easy for you, right?
One of those is us.
One of those is us. Okay, that's that one. Another one
is going to be another version of us, point two. It's going to be the Community of Christ and the Church of Christ, right? Nope.
No, you're close. No, yeah. So it's the Community of Christ is definitely one of them.
Mm-hmm. And the Church of Christ Temple Lot.
Yeah. So the Church of Christ Temple Lot is actually this fascinating offset that happened. So you've got this plot of land down in Missouri, and there were breakoffs and everything like that. And if you actually look at the plot of land in Missouri that we think that is going to be happening at, right? You've got the Church of Christ Temple Lot, which is where we laid the cornerstone and said, yeah, we're going to do a temple here, and this is where Christ is going to come back. So the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints put a temple stone there, but we lost the land, and the Church of Christ Temple Lot was actually the one that purchased the land. They got it, and they say that there have been inquiries for people buying it, and they say, no, we're not selling this. Literally,
Never, literally
across the street is the headquarters for the Community of Christ, the former reorganized church, which is, again, another offset or another offshoot of us. And then like kitty corner to that is a stake center for the Brighamite Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So it's really crazy that there have been all these groups that are around there and that have this claim. And it's not a breaking news story, but it's just interesting to see that it was profiled there. And again, if you have never looked into the Church of Christ Temple Lot, they're an interesting little group that...
I haven't looked into them. I get really into things like Big Love and Sister Wives, and so I get into like the FLDS and... Centennial Park and stuff. I like to look up. Like to be weird and be like, what is your deal, people?
I mean, you could go down a fascinating rabbit hole if you look at like the history of the Joseph Smith Church and then all the offshoots that break off from that. And mm-hmm. and even our you know, we're referred to as the Brighamite Church, even our church, as far as like, okay, how did we kind of morph over time and how did they morph over time? And then you've got obviously all the polygamous offshoots, right, which are different sects that have their own reasoning behind it. And the Centennial Park group is a very interesting group to monitor. So anyways, Fox 4 KC, we're going to throw this link in the show notes for anyone who wants to read it. But yeah, it's an interesting one. There was another interesting story. And this week, there's a couple of ones I want to talk about, but there's a few interesting ones I want to hit on real quick. There was a great piece in the Christian Science Monitor on BYU and specifically how BYU helps Muslims feel welcome. And it shouldn't be any surprise to anyone that 98 to 99% of all the students that go to BYU are going to be members of the church. But there are people who aren't Mormon who go to BYU. And the purpose of this whole story was basically, yeah, they're actually showing a lot of respect. I've heard some horror stories about people who are not Mormon that go to BYU and some of the weird stuff that happens there. But at least some of these Muslims, one of the things that they were saying was, yeah, sometimes there's some awkwardness when it comes to talking about our religion from a bunch of people who are not members of our religion. But on the whole, the people they profiled in this piece said that they were actually very sincere. Most of the members there are very sincere. And they profiled someone like Daniel Peterson, who has done a lot of work with the Middle East and specifically the Middle East Text Project, where they're getting the Middle Eastern texts from a religious standpoint and comparing the Arabic and the English. And some of these Muslims are saying, yeah, we've never researched it in the Arabic. So it's fascinating to see it that way and to bring in our perspective. So it's a nice piece. And it's a very, I like the Christian Science Monitor is a very well done publication. And I like outsiders looking at it, looking at us and saying, hey, so here's what we're seeing, mostly because whether I personally agree or disagree, I think there's a lot of value in seeing outsiders. And Rachel, this might apply to you too, because in a place like Pittsburgh, there's not a lot of members of the church around you, right?
Right. Not as much as there are Jewish people and a lot of evangelical, non-denominational Christians.
So it's kind of the same thing. I mean, you see this interesting insight into how others perceive the church. And that's why, look, I know it's a really tired joke, the whole we're Mormons, I mean members, you know, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, one of the things that's valuable about it, at least from the perspective of you and I, from not being in Utah, because if you're in Utah, you can get away with talking about things like that. But being outside, you see sometimes how the disconnect's there. And so I understand where President Nelson might be going with it. But at the same time, and I know that we need to have patience and be ecumenical with people, and maybe use that opportunity when they don't know the full name of the church to say, we're the Mormons, but we prefer to be known by this name. But it's also difficult because sometimes people aren't that interested. They want to know really quickly and that's it. And they moved on, right?
Right.
So
they use that time to just go, oh, you just spent the time that I was going to use asking my one question about plural marriage to talk about your long name, and now I'm bored. Bye.
Yeah, and I moved on. By the way, I moved on, and I forgot what I was going to originally ask you about. So, okay, I've got to ask you: do you, because you told me you're a Gen Xer? do you remember Sabrina the Teenage Witch? Do you have fond memories?
Oh, I loved Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Are you kidding me?
Have you seen the new one on Netflix?
I haven't. I saw the previews for it, and I didn't realize that that's what it was just a darker version of my show growing up.
So we've been trying to, and we completely failed this year, but Ashley and I were going to sit down and watch a whole bunch of scary movies and stuff like that through the month of October, and I don't think we watched any at all. But one of the ones, so The House on Haunting Hill was on there, which is on Netflix.
Right.
And then we heard a lot about The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which apparently is going to be a darker. I remember the TGIF version of Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Right.
Apparently this is a lot darker. So go figure. And now that I'll just be blunt. Now that House of Cards is back on Netflix, I'm done for the next, you know, who knows how long, trying to get through all of House of Cards. But this was interesting to me. This is from the Huffington Post. Lucien Graves, you of course know who Lucien Graves is, right?
Isn't he the Church of Satan guy?
Oh, it's almost like we planned this out or something like that. He is. He's a matter of
fact. I actually read about him a time.
Apparently, he's a Detroiter, and the Church of Satan was founded here in Detroit. So I don't know what we have going on. I don't know what we have going on here. We know what's in the water up in Flint. Who knows what's in the water in Detroit? But he is the so he is one of the spokesmen and co-founders of the Satanic Temple or the Church of Satan. And he took issue with the creepy, the chilling adventures of Sabrina because they include a recreation of a monument to Bahomet. Is that how you pronounce it? Bahomet.
I guess.
Basically, it's a creation of Satan that they use within the Church of Satan or something like that. I apologize. I know a lot about religions. I don't know about the Church of Satan that much, so forgive me. And he says that monument was a design that he and the Church of Satan copyrighted, accusing Netflix of, quote, appropriation. In a Twitter thread, because apparently this is how we all get our news now, is through Twitter threads.
Mm-hmm.
We are taking Twitter and Reddit and Facebook. I mean, Facebook is like old news, right? No one does Facebook anymore, right? So he said, we are now taking legal action regarding the chilling adventures of Sabrina, appropriating our copyrighted monument designed to promote their asinine satanic panic fiction. I wonder how much they worked on that. That's a nice turn of a phrase, satanic panic.
Burn. Burn, Church of Satan. Burn.
Yeah. I got you, Netflix. He later clarified, I'm amazed that anybody is confused as to why we would seek legal remedy over Sabrina using our monument. Would they be as understanding of a fictional show that used a real mosque as the headquarters of a terrorist cell? A fictional blood libel tale implicating real-world Jews. He also retweeted a post which read, imagine the outcry if Sabrina featured a baptismal font held on the backs of 12 marble oxen, the kind you find in Mormon temples, and had a character get baptized in blood in said font. As far as I know, the font isn't even an expressly copyrighted design.
It's like he's like handing it to him, like, here, why don't you do this instead? I don't think it's copywritten.
You know, I bet you these producers are going to be like, oh, this is good. Oh yeah. Let's do this. So Rachel, the thing that stands out to me is, do you know what I was thinking when I was reading this Twitter thread and all this stuff about this? I think he does make a valid point, right? The Church of Satan is an easy church to, you know, pile on and have some spooky fun with, right? But we might be thinking differently if it was a synagogue or a mosque or a Mormon temple. But you know what I was thinking about? This probably would have been, what, 2006 or 2007 when Big Love did their infamous temple scene ceremony.
I was thinking the same thing.
Okay. So did you watch that live or did you watch that after the fact?
I watched the whole show after the fact.
Okay.
So, but I still saw it.
Okay. So I was never big following Big Love, but I remember when that came out and there was a whole bunch of discussion on it and the church actually issued a statement saying, we're not too happy with this. Right. And I ended up watching it that night. I was able to, I was in college, so who knows? I was able to find a copy of that episode and I watched it. And I actually had some people that I worked with, who were very upset with me saying, why would you even do that? And my point was, listen, here in Rexburg, Idaho, you might not get a lot of people asking that question, but I'm not from Rexburg. I'm from Detroit, and I have a lot of friends who know that I'm Mormon. And so they're going to ask me about it, and I've got to at least know what I'm talking about when I see it. So on the one hand, when it first came out and happened, people were very upset. Members of the church were very upset, understandably so. But I don't know if it had the lasting staying power where people really took a step back and said, oh, that was either beautiful or awful. I will say this, it could have been done a lot worse. I actually think that they tried to be respectful in it. I didn't exactly like, so remind me, but it was basically, she was able to get a temple recommend from someone to go through the temple one last time, right?
Right. She was snuck in by her family. So her, and this was before she was excommunicated from the church because they had no idea that she was living in a plural marriage. And so her mom and her sister were going through and her mom came back out with her sister's recommend and handed it to her. And they scanned it again and she went right in.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was monumental when it happened. But that's what I've been thinking about in the sense of, and I think this is also, like I said, 2006, 2007 was a very different time, right? Like I would say that we as members of the church have almost been normalized in society based on what happened in 2012, based on what happened with the Romney campaign and with the Book of Mormon musical and all those different things, right? And so I remember when all that stuff was happening in 2006 and 2007, people were having issues with it. We were being portrayed this way. And I think validly so, right? Like especially when it comes to temple stuff, we're going to take that very seriously. At the same time, now that we're in this state, after 2012, the point that I made to a lot of people is, look, we wanted to be mainstream. We're mainstream now. And I think people have actually gotten a lot more comfortable with people maybe taking artistic liberties with things that happen within our church as far as public media goes. But it still makes it difficult because I actually kind of agree with him there. Like that is something valid. And if we want to be, now granted, from what I understand about the Church of Satan, it's not so much that they're more using it as a activism level to say we need to rethink how we treat all religions, right? Because they shouldn't have a privilege. According to them, they shouldn't have a privileged state in our society. Agree or disagree, that's up to you, right? But I think what they're saying there is something very valuable. We wouldn't be using this to mock other religions. But at the same time, I'd need to watch it. But if it makes sense in the context of the story, then maybe I understand it a little bit.
I don't even know if they were making fun of this satanic ritual. Maybe they were trying to use it for their story, like in a respectful manner, like this is how it's done. And clearly something about it is how it's done, or he wouldn't be so upset.
Or even this is how an extreme position of this could be taken. Right. Like, mm-hmm. And I understand the concern about taking extremist positions on that and then wanting to say, well, this is how all of them act, because I'm thinking of like Under the Banner of Heaven, when you have people that take extremist LDS positions. Now, granted, the Lafferty brothers were not part of the church at that time. I think they were polygamous offshoot sects at that time. But still, right. Extremist positions and saying, yeah, this applies to all of this. That's not the case. But at the same time, yeah, I could see someone getting defensive. And I actually think that, credit to him, it was actually a fairly apt analogy to say, yeah, how would you...
Very professional. Like, the thing he said, it wasn't very immature or anything, which... You know, probably upsets people who are completely against Satanists, you know, because they're like, I need to find something to hate you on. And so far, you're being very diplomatically correct. And I don't know how to disagree with that.
Maybe that'll be the big headline out of this show. Mormon News Report agrees with Satanists.
Agrees with Satanists.
No. Not the Mormon News Report. Members of the Late in the Day Saints podcast agree with the Church of Satanists. That's going to be the headline that comes out of this. You just watch on Twitter. That's what's going to happen.
We did an episode on the Satanists doing their after-school Satan program. And we were like, actually, these things kind of make sense.
They're out there. They are out there. Okay, let's shift into politics real quick. We're going to hit these really quickly. Obviously, you're following the Utah 4th Congressional District very closely. Am I right, Rachel? Yeah.
Of course, I know it backwards and forwards.
Backwards and forwards. Mm-hmm. There is a big fight going on between Ben McAdams, former mayor of Salt Lake City, and Mia Love, who is the incumbent representative. Ben McAdams is a Democrat. Mia Love is a Republican. This is like the Salt Lake City Congressional District. Both of them, McAdams and Mia Love, are members of the church. Very different politically. And the last poll by KUTV and Dixie Strategy shows Ben McAdams, with support of 49.5% of likely voters in Utah's 4th Congressional District, compared to 43% for Mia Love. The thing with Love is, because of her background both as a woman and as a woman of color, she actually made a lot of news when she first was elected. Ben McAdams is not Republican, and Mia Love has had a few things that people haven't been too happy with. So it'll be interesting to see how that one shakes out. I'm a political nerd, and so I love following Utah politics. Like, there's some weird stuff in Utah politics, and I love following it.
I'm sure.
Ben Burnick of Utah Policy made his 2018 election predictions, and we'll just cover the Mormon ones. He says that Ben McAdams is going to squeak by Mia Love in the Utah 4th District. Is this a shock to you? Who do you think is going to be the next senator of Utah?
Probably Romney.
I would think so. Like, by a very healthy margin. Yeah. And here's what he said about Proposition 2. So Proposition 2 is the one on medical marijuana. He said that he thinks it's going to pass, but just barely. It's already been announced that Republican Governor Gary Herbert will call a mid-November special session where a compromise on medical marijuana will be passed, no matter what happens on Proposition 2 on Tuesday. But I think there are enough folks out there who didn't like the LDS Church coming out against Prop 2 that a majority can be found for it. So basically he's saying that the backlash is going to spur more people on than the church's support for it. I kind of agree with him. I think that if it passes, it's going to be like very, very, very thin margins.
Right. I feel like whenever they were talking about, like, whenever they sent the email out to all the Utah members saying, please oppose this bill, I really feel like their opposition was not as informed as it should have been.
The way that I phrased it a lot of times was it felt like they didn't know that it was going to be this far and gain this much steam. And they were kind of caught with their pants down a little bit, like, I guess we got to do something now because, I didn't know this was going to happen.
They read the jacket of the book, but they didn't read the whole book.
Yeah. And then like, somebody does die at the end. Oh, I didn't know that. So anyways, really quickly, John Huntsman Jr., fellow Mormon, I think that he said he has an evolving faith or something like that, made a lot of news back in 2008 when he was running against our old pal Mittens and everything that was going on back then.
I wanted to vote for him.
John Huntsman, he was, you know, the thing is, people really didn't like John Huntsman that much because they said he wasn't Republican enough. But I actually...
He was honest.
He was honest, and that was an interesting field to watch back in 2008. I was I was in my last year of college at the time, so I'm always going to remember watching all those debates and everything like that. And you had some of the very hardline right-wing people, and then you had more moderates like Mitt Romney, and then more liberals on the Republican side like John Huntsman, and it made for made for interesting debates. And then you compare it to, you know, the debates that we had in 2015, you know, when you had people basically tuning in to see what's Donald Trump going to say next. And
this is the most luxurious debate I've ever been in.
Yeah. And look at what Rachel, look at what that got us. Welcome to Trump's America or something. John Huntsman, in an interview with the Deseret News, they were in Russia, and I'm just going to read what it says here. Trailed by a spokesman and Mary Kay, Huntsman followed me inside and shut the door. He looked concerned, and I noticed a small bead of sweat on his forehead. He began asking me not to print something he had told me. Ambassadors can't make political statements, he said. And then he just told me he had cancer. It's stage one, he said, so we'll probably get it taken care of and we'll be fine. He had noticed a small black spot behind his ear, he explained, another on his thigh, and that summer on a trip home to Utah, he stopped in at the Huntsman Cancer Center Institute and had his doctor check it out. When he got back to Russia, he got the news. He told me he was flying back to Utah the next week to get it treated. I stood there shocked. It kind of puts things in perspective, he said. So John Huntsman Jr. has stage one skin cancer. So he's getting it looked at. And obviously, listen, I don't know if the Mormon News Report umbrella or the Late in the Day Saints umbrella reaches this far, but yeah, obviously the Huntsmans are in our thoughts because that sucks.
Right. Also, my thoughts are in on his little friend that can't keep his mouth shut.
Which
he said,
one?
Don't tell him.
Oh, that guy. Well, no, he
said, don't tell anybody. And then he goes, hey, everybody, guess what he told me not to tell anybody?
Actually, I'm just noticing that. Like, yeah, I was like, hey, can I tell you something not to tell people? Well, of course you can. I have cancer. Let me type that up really quick. I got it. I got the scoop that everyone else needs. Okay, Pot Talk Radio. Let's do this really quickly. Sister Lisa Harkness, first counselor in the General Primary Presidency, and Deanne Kettering of Utah PTA spoke with the press at the church headquarters on Friday afternoon. Sister Harkness said that she has talked to many people over the past couple of weeks who think the legislative proposal has replaced Proposition 2 on the ballot. So the legislative proposal is the compromise that they came up with that it scales back some of the restrictions or some of the things on Prop 2. She said she has had to explain that this is not the case. Prop 2 is still the same. We still oppose it because it does not provide the adequate safeguards for children, youth, and our communities. Harkness reiterated the Mormon Church's stance that the proposition, as it is written, allows far too much flexibility with how marijuana will be sold and consumed. She warned it could get in the hands of children, possibly causing developmental issues and addiction. So,
what does she mean getting in the hands of children? Like the way Tide Pods have been getting in the hands of children? Like just put them up above the cookie jar where no one's allowed to touch it.
You would think so.
What they're talking about?
Well,
like,
but that's,
oh, children might be able to consume this if they have leukemia.
Well, their big thing is specifically how it is made. So like edibles, the compromise allows for, I guess, like liquid packs or something like that, like a liquid gel almost, or gummies, because apparently, according to them, gummies aren't appealing to kids, which I don't know. We've been going through our Halloween candy. I strongly disagree with that. Versus,
they're all gone.
Yeah. Versus like brownies or cookies or other things like that that could be edible that kids might find appealing.
Okay.
Or something. Anyways, so Rachel, I got to ask you, what do you think? Do you think it's going to pass? Do you think Prop 2 is going to pass in Utah?
I think it will. I think enough non-members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints will vote for Prop 2.
Thank you for using the official name. I appreciate that.
Oh yeah, anytime.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of with you. I think it's barely going to pass. But I also think the fact that the church really didn't make a full court press on opposing it until later in the year, like I want to say almost August. It was too little too late by that point. I think that they weren't aware of how the polls were going and weren't aware. And I will say this, I think it's the Utah Patients Coalition was the really big group that was really out pushing hard for it. And I think that people were surprised at how well of a job they did getting their message out there. And then how many Mormons came out in support of them. And even still, we don't have a clear answer yet on marijuana. And the fact that I've got to go through and pull interviews with the Salt Lake Tribune from public policy people to say, yeah, this is where the church stands on marijuana is still tough because Michigan's got it on the ballot this year. It's probably going to pass in Michigan. So you've got Michigan, you've got other places. I don't know. They got to figure out where they're going to go with it. So
I know.
Anyways, I'm with you though. I think it's going to pass. It's going to pass very slimly, and then we'll go from there. So, okay. And yeah. Folks, we'll be right back after this. All righty. Signature Books is proud to announce the release of Salt Lake School of the Prophets, 1867 to 1883, edited by Devery S. Anderson. The school, with nearly 1,000 members at its peak, was a decision-making body that nominated candidates for political office, discussed theological issues, and tried to manage life in Utah after the completion of the railroad, with an influx of non-Mormons to the territory that ended the isolationism that Saints had known and cherished. The Minute shed valuable light on Pioneer, Utah, and the Mormons. I will add this. Devery Anderson is a personal friend of mine. Devery is a great researcher. You should check out the other books that he's done, including things like the documentary history of LDS Temple Services, which is fascinating. You should also check out some of the books that he has done regarding the Nauvoo High Council and the Kirtland. I want to say there's like the Kirtland High Council as well. Anyways, all those are out through Signature Books. And Signature Books has also published other award-winning scholarly books in Mormon studies since its founding in 1981. And they're good. They're good friends of the show. Go support them.
Yay.
All right, let's wrap this up. So we talked a little bit about President Nelson being on his world tour. On Sunday, October 28th, he dedicated the Concepcion Chile Temple. And as part of his travels, he and his wife did an interview with the Mormon Newsroom. A couple of interesting little nuggets I'm going to pull out of this. The first one, the way that they described, they still don't know what to call the Mormon Newsroom, because in the write-up for this, it has been described as an interview with newsroom and other church media. So I guess that's what they want to call it. Here's what he said. We're witnesses to a process of restoration, said the prophet. If you think the church has fully been restored, you're just seeing the beginning. There is much more to come. Wait till next year, and then the next year, eat your vitamin pills, get your rest. It's going to be exciting. So, Rachel, do you know who else said eat your vitamin pills? Are you ready for this?
The Flintstone kids?
Pretty close. Let's listen.
Train, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, be true to yourself, true to your country, be a real American.
That's right, everybody. Hulk Hogan said train, pray, say your prayers, eat your vitamins. So I like to think that President Nelson might be a professional wrestling fan if he's tapping into the Hulkster saying, brother, this is what we've got to do. So either way, I know this was also put on Twitter, and a lot of people screenshot it and pass it around. Rachel, it seems like President Nelson is a very active church president. He's not someone that's going to sit back. President Monson, to me, and I don't mean to denigrate the deceased, but President Monson, to me, was more of a laid-back church president where we just kind of let things happen. There were some big things that happened under his watch, the Gospel Topics essays, a few other things, the separation from the Boy Scouts of America, but... Mm-hmm. Boy, he was not as active as President Nelson has been.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's interesting to watch a lot of this happening, saying, yeah, so what is coming next? Especially
maybe all of these things were planned while President Monson was in office, and they just weren't brought to light until now because it wasn't the appropriate time.
So, okay, I'm glad you said that, because Sister Nelson gave an interview after that, and she said something that was really interesting to me that kind of touches on that a little bit. So let me play what she said.
I'm changing in the last 10 months. It is as though he's been unleashed. He's free to finally do what he came to Earth to do, is my big thing. And also he's free to follow through with things he's been concerned about but could never do. Now that he's president, he can do those things. I've seen.
So that's an interesting phrase. And that's why I wanted to kind of hit on what you had said. I think that it might be a little bit of both. Obviously, when you have a big bureaucratic organization like the church, there's a lot of these things. These things don't just happen in a day, right? A lot of these things have been in the works for a very long time. At the same time, that phrase that she said, which is, he's free to follow through with things he's been concerned about but could never do. Now that he's president of the church, he can do those things. So again, not to go back to the church name thing, but I think what we saw in real time happening between both he and President Hinckley and some others was a very difference in opinion on what the name of the church should be and how we should refer to ourselves. And it's almost like I've been feeling this way for a long time. President Nelson saying, I've been feeling this way for a long time. I'm going to do it now. Like, and we're going to, he has been very, Peggy Stack did a interesting Mormon Land podcast episode where they talked a little bit about President Nelson. And she said he's not afraid to use the R word, the revelation word, a lot for what he's doing. And on the one hand, like, you know, like we talked about, you had said that you kind of like that, right? That he is, this is what I'm thinking and this is what I'm feeling. And this is, in his words, this is what the Lord wants.
Right. I do like that. But I also like that whenever he does those things, like he does the whole thing where he's like, I invite you to pray about it because I came, like, my feeling is that the Holy Ghost is telling me that this is what's supposed to happen. So, but like, he has not been like, you have to listen to me and because I'm the mouthpiece of the Lord. Like, I haven't really heard of any prophets doing that, but you know what I mean?
Well, I don't know. Brigham Young was pretty close to
that.
Not
recently. I mean, I'm talking about the ones that I like.
Right, right. Well, but you know, if I think back, I think probably the closest to that would have been, and I'd have to go back and look at some of, because I don't know if he said it while he was president, but someone like a Joseph F. Smith was a very passionate, he had very distinct views on certain things. But it seems like a lot of people, once they become church president, they kind of tone down a little bit. They kind of get a little softer. That was a big concern that people had about Ezra Taft Benson, because he was so passionate about specifically his political views on the right. And people were concerned when he became president, like, ooh, is this going to kind of get into some of his political talk or is church talk now that he's church president? And it was the Book of Mormon. That was it. But that's the interesting phrase that Sister Nelson used was, it's as though he's been unleashed, which makes me wonder, what else do you got in there? A couple of other interesting nuggets that she said, my husband is a global man. He thinks outside of the box. If it's not outside the box, he's not that interested in it. He's not interested in cutting the ham to fit inside the pot anymore. I actually really like that phrase, cut the ham to fit inside the pot, just because it was tradition. And he's not about, because it was tradition, let's do something different. He wants to look at, why are we doing that? That's what has caught his attention time and time again. Why were we doing that? Why are we spending the widow's mite on that for? If we're really preparing the church and the world for the second coming of the Savior, he's sincere about that. He doesn't want us spending money, time, energy on anything that isn't really focused on that. It's pretty stunning. So if I take a step back, I think that kind of lines up with what we're seeing, right? Like he is.
That's why we're spending it on 12 temples.
Right? And although that's why we're spending it on 12 temples and another temple in Utah, because why not? Right.
But I
like the fact that he, according to Sister Nelson, he thinks outside the box, because that's not something we see a lot within church leadership. I don't think it's being disparaging to say that they are older, they are more conservative, and there's a lot that is focused on tradition, because that's the way we've always done it in the church. And so the way we've always done it thing comes up a lot. And I wonder if that means that we could see some more dramatic changes. And I know from my perspective as a youth leader, and I know that other people who work with the youth, personally, I'd love to see young women get a lot more involved with the sacrament. And if he's got that attitude, which is, it's outside the box, and why are we doing that?
Do your women not do anything during the sacrament?
Do yours do something during the sacrament? Ours don't.
Yeah, they do. Our women, our young women are in charge of the chapel doors, like whenever they're closed, and they open and close them for the kids passing out the sacrament, and they let them know if there's like a woman in the mother's room who needs it, and they'll take it to them so they can take, like, they're pretty involved. Like, whoa, and they'll point to, like,
how am I just now knowing it? Rachel, how often do you and I talk, and how is it that this is the first time that I'm hearing about this? Like, this is a big deal.
This has been going on since like two bishops ago in our ward. They're like, dude, ladies belong here. So
okay. Because it's always traditionally been the teachers, the 14 to 16 year olds serve as ushers, and they sit, you know, they shut the doors to the chapel when we're going to do sacrament. They sit right next to the doors, and they open the doors to make sure it's not too loud and stuff like that. But you have your young women sitting.
Our young women do it. Yeah.
Is it all young women? Is it certain age classes with the young women?
It's all young women, because we only have two. So
it's, but still, that's,
yeah, we do that, man.
That's so cool.
Ahead of the curve.
But that's something that I think that I could see President Nelson sitting there going, why not? Why not?
Yeah.
There's no reason why we can't do that. And I actually, I love that because, so I've got to ask you, do you work with a young woman at all? Or have you worked with a young woman?
I have worked with a young woman. I was the second counselor like 5 years ago.
Did it make a difference to some of these young women to be involved with a sacrament like that?
It did. I'm pleasantly surprised to see one of them is serving a mission right now.
Really? So
well, like, I didn't think she wasn't strong in her faith or anything. I just think she expected to graduate high school and then work with her family. Mm-hmm. And because that seemed to be like what she thought would happen, like, oh, I'm just going to stay home and work, like help my family run the restaurant. And she's out on a mission instead.
That's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that because I could see that being one of the things that we change. There's no reason why we can't do it. So why not?
Yeah. I don't think it's something to change. It's just something to do. You know what I mean?
But it is something to change though, because if I were to propose something like that in my ward, knowing and granted, even me in a position of privilege that I've been in for quite a few different things, being, being a man. So being able to sit in on some of these bishopric meetings, right?
Being Caucasian.
But I would also, one of the privileges that I have is being someone who has lived in my ward for such a long time that I already have a bit of reputation. I don't know how to describe, like, I have some cachet where I can say things and not have people being like, what's going on there? But still, having a very conservative bishopric and having a very conservative stake presidency, that wouldn't fly. And I think it wouldn't fly unless it was something that was updated in the handbook or President Nelson said, yeah, well, guess what? Young women, you're doing this. And then they'd be all on board. But so it does take a progressive bishop to take that next step to be like, yeah, we're gonna do this.
Yeah, he takes artistic liberties without being apostate.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like this is a bishop that might have read Nyla McBain's Women at Church.
Ooh, I should ask him. Maybe, I don't think he has time to read. He has 6 kids.
Oh, well, maybe not. Maybe. The other thing that stood out is she said he's a global man. And I think that also you could really tell with just how much he's traveling around the world. And also the fact that they are a lot of the changes that they're making is on a global basis to sit here and say, is this a Utah or a United States centric thing that we're doing? Or is there a broader global applicability here? And I see this at work. So I do a lot of globalization initiatives while I'm at work. And that's the feedback that we get all the time is this is very much a North America thing. We don't have this problem in Australia or in Thailand. So why are we talking about this? And so I like that about him. A couple of other quick quotes that she said, I cannot get him to act his age. How does a 94-year-old act, Rachel? I don't know.
Does he wear wheelies in the airport? What's happening?
He's got work to do. So that's the quickest way to get from
there quick.
One end to the other. Get the wheelies out and go, right?
Right.
She said, if he is at home, he'll say, it's wonderful to be at home, but I need to be with the people. And I know that President Nelson, his personality and some of the things he says might rub some people the wrong way. But I think that I genuinely feel that that is a sincere thing that he is doing. And you could tell with just how much traveling he's done in this first year is he is much more comfortable being around with the people. So,
yeah.
And then he finally wrapped it up with this interview and said, this is a global ministry. We're prophets for the whole world, all of God's children, not just the members of the church. We'll get around. But we still miss more than we'll touch, but we try. We won't give up just because it's a big job.
I like that.
So here's what I'll say here's what I'll say, and I don't know if we have enough time to get into a lot of it. I think that President Nelson might be the type of person who's really going to redefine. I think President Nelson has a very distinct vision in his mind for what he thinks the president of the church and the prophet of the church should be doing. Mm-hmm. And I think a big part of that is not being scared to make a lot of statements and not being scared to say what's on his mind. I think another big part of that is someone who is taking a lot of the promptings that he's receiving very seriously. That's another thing that's come out was Sister Nelson has said that he will get up in the night and he's writing notes all the time of promptings that he receives and stuff like that. And I think that you're kind of seeing that come to fruition. Now, what happens with that is sometimes there are statements like religious extremism that we covered earlier that are really nice, right? Like, yeah, you should have said that a long time ago. He said something along the lines of he made a statement on guns a while back after some of the shootings that happened earlier this summer. But at the same time, there's also been other things that have happened where maybe people of our religious persuasion, our progressive side, maybe don't like as much. But at the same time, like yeah. I said, it. I guess I'll just come out and say it. I think he really views his time as president of the church as something that is, I'm very comfortable having the limelight on me, and I'm very comfortable doing a lot of these things. And it's almost like he is, he's wanting to raise the profile of president of the church, which is interesting compared to how it's been done in years past. And I think it's going to help, but I also be intrigued to see, okay, so what happens next? He's got a lot of energy now, and who knows what will happen when it goes by. So I don't know. Have you noticed a difference in President Nelson compared to any of the other church presidents that you can think of in your lifetime?
I have noticed that he is a lot more active, like you said, than President Monson. President Hinckley was like my president when I was a teenager. Like, he was really, really into being passionate about the youth and protecting the youth and how teaching them to protect themselves, like with all his bees and all that stuff. But President Nelson, like you said, he's really active and he's going to all these places. And I was reading one of the interviews where he said, ministry is really strong in South America right now. Like, we went from zero members to 3 million, and and the church is really strong there, and faith is really strong there. And I just feel like, I feel like he's comfortable with being in the limelight, not in the limelight, but being so much more active because he's calling us to also be more active, which is part of the whole like 2-hour church thing, so that we can be more active in our families and taking like ownership of our own faith a little bit more, I feel like.
So that's an interesting point, because there was a thought that just came into my mind of it's been a focal point of his, and really, I think, over the last couple of conferences, that we need to start taking those next steps, right? Like, we're not just going to go through the motions at church anymore. There's now going to be 2-hour church, but we're expecting you to go home and do something with it, right? Mm-hmm. And I wonder if this is him trying to walk the walk a little bit, saying, as long as I have energy in my bones, I'm going to be out there among the people, talking to them and ministering with them and visiting with them, especially in international locations that might not see it that often, which is really refreshing. And I don't know all of President Monson's health history, so I don't know if that was difficult for him. But to have someone as the head of the church, and I just know from my time in Korea when I was on a mission there, anytime we had someone from major church leadership come out to Korea, it was a big deal because it's on the other side of the world, right? It makes a difference, and people really are energized by it. And so to see him saying, yeah, we're saying all these things, and guess what? I'm going to be out there walking the walk with you. It's refreshing until he says something that we don't agree with, but still.
Yes.
Oh yeah. He said something. And oh yeah. I don't know if I agree with
that.
So
that again, go back to the other thing. Yeah. I like that thing.
Yeah. Go back to the thing that I agreed with. I really liked it when you were saying stuff like that. So anyways, folks, I want to know your thoughts. Have you noticed a change in President Nelson versus other church presidents? Feel free to get in touch with us either on Facebook or at our email address, mail@mormonnewsreport.com, because I want to know if I'm the only one that's seeing this, or if maybe I'm just too absorbed in Rachel and I are too absorbed in Mormon news to you know, see the forest through the trees. But anyways, let us know. mail@mormonnewsreport.com. Okay, Rachel.
Yeah.
Do you have a sunshine in your soul this week?
I do.
Okay. What is it?
So this week I am crazy and decided to do like a no TV challenge for my kids. Like, they weren't in trouble or anything like that. I just decided that they needed to not have as much screen time. And oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm doing right, but they're still not eating their vegetables, but they are sleeping in their own beds. They're staying in their beds all night. They're fighting less because they're playing together more. So they're communicating better. And like, they're not running to me whining to make me fix it. So I'm there like being the mom and like leading them to their independence and their communication skills and their social skills are up already. And oh my gosh, it's so weird. Also, I bought a ukulele.
Which, I'm sorry, I just like the, you know what it was? It was you're running and you go off the pommel horse and there's all these flips and then you land it with, also I bought a ukulele.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering, did the ukulele play a factor into any of this at all?
No, I just, since I'm the primary chorister, I am trying to think of all these ways to make the music and memorizing all this music fun for the kids. And so I'm thinking of like fruit shaped egg shape, like the shakers, and I want to play the ukulele during like primary and like just be all cute. And I think that I'm like Zooey Deschanel from New Girl, just without like the boy issues. So I don't know. But
well, I don't know. You're married to Colin, so maybe that might be true. I don't know. So I've got it.
That's
so then,
the thing, though. I'm already married. I don't have to worry about dating anymore.
Fair point. Fair. So I've got to ask, how long is it before you learn to play Somewhere Over the Rainbow on the ukulele? Because anybody who's got a ukulele.
Never.
No. It's an unwritten requirement. Anyone who has a ukulele has to play that song.
But what if I learn like a Nirvana song instead? Like Come As You Are. Can that be my Over the Rainbow?
I'd love to hear Smells Like Teen Spirit on the ukulele.
Yes.
That might be a very interesting one. So how long did it take for the kids to adjust to this no TV thing? Like, did they?
Like 2.5 days.
Okay.
I think. So it wasn't an immediate change, but like I could see them finally going, all right, Mom, I'll do what you say. Because they like to argue. They're like, but my show isn't over. And that's when I was like, they're saying my show isn't over, so they think they're in charge. I can't let this happen. I'm in charge. I'm the adult.
So it's like 2.5 days of hell, right? And once you get through that, it gets a little bit better.
Yeah, it's like potty training.
So let me tell you about kids these days, Rachel. Let me tell you something.
Kids.
Your kids are probably the same way. So my kids watch a lot of on-demand stuff, right? Like YouTube or whatever, right?
Yep.
And so they don't understand what it was like for you and I growing up, where it was like you had a set amount of time. You had from like 7 a.m. until 9 o'clock in the morning to watch shows. And then you were on like the People's Court with Judge Wapner. Like that's what it used to be growing up. And you had to figure out something to do. I watched a lot of People's Court when I was growing up. But no, my kids, they could just like scroll through YouTube and Nick Jr. all day and find stuff. And it's like, you don't understand how good you've got it.
Right.
Anyway.
Like, be grateful, children.
All right. Maybe we'll try it. And when I say we'll try it, maybe Ashley will try it. And then I'll get to hear about how awful it is. So, okay. Two things on my sunshine and my soul. One, there was a great Twitter thread and I've got to find it, but it was on missions. And this is, I'm just going to read the first tweet from this thread. My mission was hard. People told me it would be hard, but I guess I didn't realize that it would be like hard, hard. Someone once told me they would sit on the bathroom floor and cry, and I didn't believe her until I was sitting on the bathroom floor crying. And this is from a girl who had served a mission. And it was this wonderful Twitter thread that talked a lot about some of the realities of going on a mission. And for her, only being able to last 10 months due to some physical issues, the fact that she looks back and says, no, I don't feel bad about saying it was really hard. I learned a lot. It wasn't the easiest thing in the world. I can't say it was the best time of my life, but sometimes we just need to be a little more realistic that it's hard out there. And the thing I like about it is I think that we are getting much better at talking about missions. We're not using the phrase the best 2 years, despite the fact that some people might think that, right? We are much more realistic.
That movie is called The Best 2 Years.
So. The movie and the way, I think for a long time we wanted people to say, I think it's human nature to look back on things and look at the good times and not remember the bad times. But when that's all you talk about, it makes it kind of difficult for someone who goes on a mission saying, no, I'm supposed to love every single day of this and I'm not loving every day of it. So anyways, I will include a link to this Twitter thread in the show notes, but it's highly recommended. And sunshine in my soul, number three, we mentioned about a month ago that my wife was pregnant with child number three. On Monday, I was at home and we dropped my kids off over at my sister's house, and Ashley and I went to the doctor and we did the ultrasound and we saw it. We saw the baby, and child number three, Malone child number three, will be the third straight girl in the Malone family. So all I've heard about, I work very closely with an executive. So me and his administrative assistant are good buddies. And she basically said, look, Brant, you know that it's you that's got the secret ingredient and it's your stuff that's making it girly. So you need to go out there and shoot some guns and drink some beer to toughen up a little bit. And I was like, thanks, Trish. That's awesome. Good talking to you too. But yes, Malone child number three.
Be happy that you have three girls because you don't have to buy new clothes. You can use all those hand-me-downs.
Hold on. Do you know what's funny? That is actually what Ashley said. Like, Brant, think of the bright side.
Ashley and I need to be friends.
We We don't have to buy new girl. We don't have to buy new girl clothes. The downside is this though. We have like a list a mile long of boy names, and we don't have any girl names, and we're struggling with girl names.
Are any of those boy names androgynous enough to use for a girl?
No.
Like, you know, Riley, Peyton,
no.
Jessica.
The one that we were talking a lot about was Rhett.
Oh, Rhett I have a Malone. Friend who has a daughter named Retta.
Oh, maybe that's one. Maybe that's okay. Yeah. Maybe I'll propose that. Although you couldn't get your boy, so you just named your daughter a boy's name with an A on the end. I could just imagine that conversation. So, anyways.
No, this woman, her grandmother's name was Retta, so she named her after her grandmother.
Well, and Ashley's really big right now into the older style name. She was talking about. I'm probably not supposed to say, because if I say, she's probably going to shoot me. The fact that I'm saying, I don't know. She gets really weird about like, don't say the names, because then people are going to say, I like or don't like that name. Or I knew someone growing up who had that name and they were a jerk. And then it's just going to taint the name. So I probably shouldn't say anything. Anyways, okay. Malone child number three is going to be a girl.
Congratulations.
The nice thing about girls is both of my girls, even my little 2.5-year-old Hellion, they're sweet and they're cuddly and things like that. And so I will have that.
And everything's pink, so it offsets the crazy.
Listen, Rachel, I have learned how to compliment women on their haircuts and notice when they get a haircut. I'm well versed in the mythology of My Little Pony and unicorns and all those things.
Which one's your favorite pony? Pick one.
Personally, I like Pinkie Pie. It's my daughter, my oldest daughter loves Fluttershy, although I relate a little bit more to Rainbow Dash. So
there you go.
Anyways, okay.
The Dash is my girl.
There you go. Okay, so Rachel, thank you so much for coming on. If people want to hear more of you, where can they find you?
They can find me at Late in the Day Saints. We also have a lateinthedaysaints.blogspot.com that has not been updated since the blogspot was invented. Also, you can find us on Facebook under Late in the Day Saints. I'm the one that moderates that, so you're talking to me anytime you put anything on there. And you can also find us at on Twitter at Late Day Saints.
Hold on, let me write a note here. Troll Rachel on Facebook. Okay. And it's a listen, we've had some fun with Colin and Rachel and Isaac in the past. It's a good show. It's very, very different from ours. So
it's very sarcastic and satirical. At least one of us is playing a character and they're actually not that awful in real life.
Well, it's not Colin, I'll tell you that, based on a few of my conversations with him. So anyways, late in the Day Saints is where you can find more of Rachel if you want that. For us, you can visit our new fancy website at mormonnewsreport.com. You can find us on TuneIn. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Google Podcasts, on Stitcher. Anywhere you get your podcast, and we're adding new stuff all the time. You can find us on Twitter at The Mormon News, or if you want to talk with Jenny at Formerly Fred, FormerlyPhread, and of course, mail at MormonNewsReport.com. Rachel, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great. It's been awesome.
It's been a pleasure.
Cool. Thank you again. And if you want more of Rachel, you can go to Late in the Day Saints. And folks, we will talk to you again after a while. Boom. Done. We did
it. That was awesome.